and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
Okay, let's lower the bucket and see if we can dredge the bottom of the time hole. Time.
Time.
I'm Layman Pascal, and you're listening to the Cinematic Asylum on CILU 102.7 FM. Time. What is it and why should we care? Well, the reason we should care is obvious. It's because we can become even more functional, expansive, and authentic beings in the world by adjusting or evolving the ways that we experience time. We all want to have a good time and have good timing in our work, our relationships, our choices, the ways we move our bodies. We don't want to feel like we have no time. And to survive and thrive on this planet, we urgently need to shift our society into a mode that takes the future seriously, that is capable of long-range plans, that feels the reality of tremendously significant events that don't show up all at once or right away or in a single day or in a single year. We should be living as if the next decade, the next century, the next millennium are really real. That's serious stuff. So we need a serious upgrade in our temporal intelligence, our time mindfulness. It's a little less serious, but also quite interesting to think about what time is, what role it has in making a useful map of reality. What can we say about time without being totally incoherent?
Here's Hans Zimmer's Time from the Inception soundtrack.
Thank you.
Can we perceive eternity? Philosophers and physicists frequently think about time and eternity, but mystics, Gnostics, and psychedelic explorers frequently encounter something that they interpret as eternity. What goes on when a person experiences the forever of things? Subjectively, these are very valuable experiences, and they're obviously different from our everyday sense of time. However, it's also very suspicious that these experiences of eternity start, go on for a while, and then stop. They seem to be temporary encounters with that which is the exact opposite of temporariness. Many, many people seem to have experienced forever for a while. We end up saying things like, "It's a paradox," and "The world is simultaneously a place of eternity and becoming." Now, these are very pleasing, integrative, and suggestive phrases, but it's hard to know if they actually tell us anything. A cautious explanation is that your brain has simply turned off its internal clock. We think the brain has several layers of clocks, of time-tracking systems, that coordinate our perceptions and organize them into something like a timeline. The smallest, fastest clock is the one that takes a tiny fraction of a second to organize your incoming information into the experience of past, present, and future. It takes data, and it puts one bit of that data in front of another so that when it reaches our consciousness, we experience it as happening one after another. Our brain builds an instant for us, and then another instant, and then another. Anything happening faster than that will not be perceived by us as happening in time. Anything faster than our fastest brain clock is not yet arranged into perceptible sequential continuity. So if you were for some reason able to speed up your consciousness and probe down below that first clock and pass between the moments into whatever lies on the other side of moments, you would experience things without normal time organization. But that's not objective eternity. Why not? Because it takes a little bit of time for that first clock to do its work. It takes some real time in order to invent the time that we experience. You don't experience moments until the data is arranged into moments, but it takes a tiny bit of objective time, which must already exist, in order to weave your experience into the experience of a moment in which one thing happens after another. That doesn't mean there's no eternity. It does mean, however, that your experience of timelessness is not necessarily evidence of timelessness. But at the same time, we should consider the role of relativity. If you're surfing on top of a wave, then you are not moving relative to that wave. It stays below you, almost as if nothing is changing, although the wave is still moving through the ocean. So it's plausible to imagine that if you were moving or perceiving at the same tempo as objective time, at the rate of time, then you might suddenly not see it or feel it. It would still be active, still be happening, but if you were happening along with it at the same speed, then it might seem to you to be unchanging, still, eternal, timeless, and that would be an accurate perception.
We'll be right back.
Fractal time. Is that a thing? We have this habit that everybody with half a brain has already criticized of thinking about time as a line, as a road or a river or the flight of an arrow. And there's some utility to that idea because it helps us zero in on particular patterns of change. But the metaphor is deeply flawed because time applies to the entire landscape. The whole universe is passing through time, not just the river or the arrow. The background is also moving through time. There is no stable background against which to compare the flight of the arrow or the movement of the river or your movement down a road. Everything all together all at once is undergoing the changes that we call time. So ultimately, you will need some other metaphor. Terence McKenna famously proposed a fractal model, which is probably insufficient but fascinatingly suggestive and has strong resonances with mystical and psychedelic experience. In his model, time is wiggling up and down, oscillating between novelty and habit, and the pattern of oscillation, like any fractal, is unpredictable but constantly recreating a particular outcome known as the strange attractor. The chaos constantly reproduces a common pattern at all different scales. So imagine that history as we know it is one example of this waving, wiggling pattern reproduced at all scales, and that each epoch is an example of the same pattern, and each lifetime is an example of that same pattern. Each day, each moment is an example of the same pattern of all history. So that waking up in the morning is like the Big Bang, and around 4 in the afternoon, it's the 17th century. This was McKenna's idea. It's a very neat idea. Can you qualitatively examine your own life such that you could discover parallels to the unfolding fractal of history as it wiggles between repetition and novelty, seeking that place of infinite excess where novelty and habit are indefinitely fused together in one phenomenon of ultimate, perfectly predictable surprise? Oh!
Here's Terence McKenna.
Which lasts longer, a million years in which nothing happens, or 10 seconds with 50,000 events crammed into it? In other words, really, time is only experienced by the events which occur within it. And I maintain that the early universe had very little going on, and consequently, time moved very, very slowly. The character of time as we approach the present is that there are more and more physical domains and energetic domains in which change can occur. For example, the early universe was a pure plasma, a pure swarm of unassociated electrons. You didn't even have atomic systems, let alone chemistry, molecular chemistry, life, complex speciated life, and dynamically balanced planetary ecosystems. Each one of those more complex phenomena crystallized out, or emerged, if you will, from the previous systems that had come into existence. So when I say time is speeding up, what I mean really is that more and more is happening. More and more is happening. More connectivity occurs now in a calendar year than occurred in a million years, a billion years ago. So somehow, as we approach the present, we find ourselves in an ever denser realm of activity, interrelationship, connectivity, and the result of this is more of the same, producing a shrinking globe, ever more immersive technologies, a dissolution of political, social, gender, and class boundaries. of all sorts. So that's what I mean when I say the universe is speeding up. You know, before the advent of man, of human beings, the fastest changes on this planet of any consequence were genetic changes, changes in the genomes of plants and animals. Well, biologists know that for a fruit fly to add a spur to its leg, for a bird to change its plumage, you need hundreds of thousands, sometimes millions of years of evolutionary time. With the advent of human beings using spoken language, a new kind of possibility was born. It's called epigenetic change. In other words, change which is not about genes, but which is about languages, customs, behaviors of human beings. Epigenetic change reaches its dramatic culmination in speech, writing, and communication of all sorts. And so the carriers of epigenetic change, the human beings, are automatically then the carriers of accelerated novelty. And so when you look at, let's say, evolution on a coral reef, and you compare it, let's say, to the evolution of political ideas in modern Europe, obviously modern Europe's rate of change in this domain is thousands of times faster. So by moving from the genetic to the epigenetic realm, we have vastly accelerated all kinds of processes. Now we appear to be about to move from the strictly human domain to the human-machine symbiosis domain. And of course, machines process information, make connections, and do their work at a rate thousands of times faster than any human being can work. So we see again a progressive acceleration of the process of creating and maintaining varieties of connectivity. If the universe is complexifying faster and faster, an epoch, a time will come when this rate of complexification is occurring so rapidly that it will become itself the overwhelming phenomena in the world of three-dimensional space and time. And I call this the omega point, or the transcendental object at the end of history. And I believe it is not that far off, that with the emergence of a global internet, a human population of several billions, an electronic noosphere, that we are now within the shadow of this transcendental object at the end of time. Our religions sense it. That's what gives them their apocalyptic intuitions. And I think the ordinary man and woman in the street sense a kind of built-in acceleration to time itself. Well, rather than dismissing that or treating it as a psychological perception or something unique to our society, I took it as a basic perception about physics, and have built elaborate, mathematically defined theories around this idea, and then have found, to my astonishment, incredible congruences with other work. I'm thinking of the Mayan calendar and its curious countdown-like quality toward an extremely unique event that the Maya felt would occur in the same time frame that my own equations predicted, even though at the time I was unaware of the Maya. So what we have here is...
CILU is sponsored in part by the Students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
The Foundry at 242 Red River Road, open 11 a.m. to 2 a.m. Monday to Saturday, featuring folk in Mondays, karaoke Tuesdays, trivia Wednesdays, open stage Thursdays, and live music weekends. Find out more at thefoundrypub.com. the Thunder Bay Symphony Orchestra. Log on to tbso.ca or call 626-TBSO for details on the 2019-2020 season and how to get tickets. The Lakehead University Student Union, promoting action, advocacy, and service by bringing you student centers. Learn more by visiting their office in the tunnels of the student center or by logging on to lusu.ca.
I'm Layman Pascal, and you're listening to The Cinematic Asylum on CILU 102.7 FM. Our feeling of time seems to evolve, doesn't it? That is to say, we can seem to go through a few different degrees of complexity in terms of how we think about time, how we sense time, what it means to us, how much of it there seems to be, that sort of thing. For lack of a better terminology, I would probably focus on primitive time, millennial time, deep time, plural time, and transcendental time, let's say. And I'll explain those terms. They're just placeholders. It's hard to figure out animal time. We joke that dogs know about reality for about 3 seconds. You go out the door and they think you're gone for good, never coming back, just vanished from reality. And you come back in a few seconds later, they go crazy. It's like you're back from the dead. They wrote you off completely, you were gone forever, but now here you are again after a lifetime. And maybe there's some truth to that, but clearly animals can also get traumatized and learn things, so there's also a sense in which they have more extended memories, and therefore some kind of more extended sense of time. Particularly the ones with proportionally larger brains or more complex social schemas. We don't know of a creature with a 3-day lifespan feels their life to be the same length as ours or not. What we do know with more clarity, though, is what early human time is like. We kind of remember what it was like to be children, and we sort of get what it's like to live in a campsite in the wilderness, and we know a few things about untouched tribal cultures. So primitive time is interesting. Although it adapts well to regular phenomenon, it also forgets about schedules. It doesn't have schedules. It takes children, for example, a while to learn about calendars. They have to be reminded about upcoming events, and they seem to forget themselves in moments, in moods. People often resort to the notion of a dream time, a kind of half-asleep, half-awake theta-wave notion about a realm of animals and ancestors that inhabits and permeates the complexity of the biosphere. A dreaming time. A kind of unconscious time that we are always just slightly displaced from when we are children, or when we live under campsite conditions that don't require us to think about clocks and calendars and schedules in the future. How much time does it take when you suddenly come across a grotesque stone mass carved in the deep jungle? How long does a boar hunt take? How long should you wait to make sure there are no wolves near the campsite? There's something very familiar and very seductive about this kind of variable, organic, basic time. It seems loose, acoustic, ambient, organic, natural. It doesn't encounter a lot of progress. Things are generally cyclic and surprising. Flowers grow, bloom, die, repeat. The village doesn't change much from generation to generation. New technologies almost are never seen appearing. They tell stories about the first people, but those stories could have happened a few days ago, a few weeks ago. It's sort of like trance time. One of the things you can do, you know, to induce a hypnotic trance is to disrupt our more advanced sense of time. I don't know whether, for example, they might say this, whether you're going to go into a trance right away or whether it will take some other length of time for you to go into a trance. I don't know if afterwards you'll notice changes in your behavior that show up in 2 or 3 or 11 or 4 days. But when you come back to regular consciousness, you'll not only feel very rested, but you might also not know how long it's been since we started this process, how long it is that you've been using trance consciousness. So you see, there's this kind of fluid time that goes along with the really natural ancient styles of interaction between the conscious and the unconscious minds. Calendar cults are one of the oldest forms of organized human religion, or at least one of the first to leave behind artifacts. A lot of our most ancient and deepest superstitions are arranged by the calendar. Hunting, farming, and watching the stars gave our Paleolithic ancestors a real knack for thinking about the large, important time cycles. You have to know when to plant and when to get ready for the flooding of the river. You have to know when the herds are returning. You have to know that the sun and the stars that you use for navigation will look differently at different seasons. The use of stones, large stones often, megaliths, to mark the movement of celestial and biospheric events was already widespread before recorded history. The year and the great year are still deeply attached to our intuitions. We still have astrology by the month and astrology by the birth year. We still have birthdays and New Year's and other holy days. We still compulsively ask each other about how many times the earth has circled the sun since you were born, and we worry superstitiously about what that might mean. Are you old enough, shit? Shit. Are you old enough yet, I meant to say? Are your best days perhaps behind you? Does this year feel different somehow? Is this the regular weather for this time of season? Is it an election year? Which of the 7-year phases of life am I in? Are you going to celebrate Thanksgiving this year? On and on and on, literally. Calendar cult is sort of our default setting at this point. Things change a little bit when we get larger populations and calendars and writing and farming. The great story becomes the year. The age in which we live is created. An official group myth becomes enforced. It becomes enforced on many different tribes. It's meta-tribal. All these tribes are now made to work together as a people, as a nation, as an ethnicity. There's a sort of general shift in that movement also in terms of what we assume about time. 2 things stand out to me about this new system, this next system. First is that it organizes society around official hereditary cycles. And secondly, that it organizes its worldview around what I would call millennial cycles. Some of these urban, agrarian, ethnocentric kingdom nations feel the world is about 6,000 years old, that it came into being around the time that writing started and will soon perish because the official written rules in the Great Book are not being obeyed. Other kingdoms around the world have thought in terms of a vast number of these several thousand-year cycles of world creation, kingdoms, and apocalypse. I would probably argue that the people who feel there's only one cycle of creation to apocalypse are probably dealing with a truncated or impoverished version of the normal idea of mythic time, which is an official super-calendar with an unlimited number of millennial epochs, each presided over by a new pantheon with a new monarch god overseeing it. In either case, people learn to feel that several thousand years is a very reliable unit of time, visceral, imaginable, realistic. Time works like this. There's a sudden burst of creation, a beginning of time, and then several thousand years go by, and then destabilization and catastrophe and the end of time. The end of our great time. These people still exist today, even within us. And if you tell them about the billions of years that the Earth has had existence, they don't care. It doesn't mean anything to them. That's a nonsensical amount of time. It doesn't feel substantial. To them, it's just empty talk. The notion of a very long cycle, a deep time, they call it, starts to feel real among people that we might call modern, even if they were popping up occasionally since the Axial Age. 18th century thinkers really solidified this approach, and they helped us think about geological time, Darwinian time, and the cosmological history of physics. And this isn't just a much longer cycle of time, which it is, but it's also a span in which radical and cumulative changes occur. In kingdom time, in mythological time, things remain pretty constant. After the end of time, another world comes into existence and rapidly reproduces the same normal kingdom technologies and social customs as last time and every time before that. Sure, it may fluctuate up and down a little as people who are more or less faithful to the sacred laws take control, but prophecy there is mostly a warning about our need to obey the sacred laws as we fluctuate up and down slightly. It's not a tale of dramatic change. Each cycle is in pretty much the same position as the previous cycle. But in deep time, modern time, there is radical change. We say the sun didn't used to exist, and it will eventually die out. There used to be dinosaurs right here where you live. All the continents, they were somewhere else. Life didn't have to be created because there was enough time for it to just guess and test its way to the current degree of amazingly adaptive intelligence. And what's more, we just figured out a lot of new things. Things that none of our ancestors knew. There's progress in this new time. Scientific, social, moral, creative, and technological progress. Things are always being invented. Things are always changing. They're always being improved over the course of deep time. Our awareness of a vast past enables a powerful new orientation toward the future, a sense of temporal rupture, of dramatic change, not just repetition. But there's also something else, something more than modern time. It sounds clumsy to call it postmodern time, but perhaps it's pluralistic time or something like that. It expands and complicates and bends and remixes the deep time. Einstein announces that time can only be calculated as a relationship and that clocks oscillate faster or slower depending on where they are and how fast they're going compared to other clocks and where they are and how fast they're going. That's astonishing. It checks out in almost every experiment, but modern people walked around for decades telling each other that no one could understand Einstein at all. It tumbles past modern time, this vision, and it's rapidly joined by quantum time, by this notion that the best way to figure out what's happening to particles of the universe is by treating them as if they were doing different things simultaneously. alternative timelines. That becomes a concept. Perhaps time is flowing in many universes at once, parallel or branching universes, or maybe time within one universe is like a rope woven from many threads of possible time. Maybe time is fractal. This vast, flexible multiplicity of deep time moving in many directions at once, in which there are many different kinds of progress, this is a move beyond the normal notion of deep time. It's hard to think of where the experience of time could go beyond that. However, there do seem to be ways in which the past and future merge, ways in which deep time and multiple time stand forth more obviously in a complex present moment that has something of the golden flavor of eternity, diaphanous transplural eternities of presence, possibly a Gebserian impression that the multidirectional, multidimensional, or evolutionary history and potential of each thing is present, obviously present in everything you behold, as if it were transparent to its own processes and to the eternity of processes in general, eternity in a grain of sand. All right, let's get the useless question out of the way first. What is time? Well, there's something like pragmatic and something like philosophical time. Pragmatic time is just whatever clocks do. And by clocks, I mean oscillators, things that operate in a regular pattern. That's what Einstein meant by time. When he says time is relative, he means the rate at which clocks tick is relative. Oscillations are elastic and comparative. Other things like gravity, velocity, and mass influence how long one clock tick is compared to another clock tick. The size of the tick is elastic. That's pragmatic time. Philosophical time is different. It's the concept of duration per se. It's the mere fact that things happen. So if you're using pragmatic time, clock time, then it makes sense that there could be a beginning of time. That means that at some point in the past, one clock measures another clock as having a tick of zero. Any clock not ticking at some point then started to tick. That's the beginning of time. It makes complete sense in terms of Einstein's theory of general relativity. It may make less sense in a quantum model where Planck time may indicate the smallest possible moment that is never the same as zero, but generally pragmatic time could have started at some point. Philosophical time, on the other hand, could not have started. To start is an event. To go from no time to time takes some time. It is an event. Events require time to occur. Events don't take no time. Otherwise, all events would take no time, and there would be no such thing as time. So if there is time, then time could not have started, because starting would take some time, no matter how small an amount of time that might be. So philosophically, time must always have existed, regardless of what any or all clocks measure, regardless of the comparative length of the duration of any unit of oscillation for any frame of observer. And what about the past and future? Well, I don't think they exist. I mean, sure, memory of past events and past patterns is imprinted upon current phenomenon, and future outcomes can be predicted instinctively or analytically with a high degree of accuracy by resonance with the momentum of currently unfolding patterns. Duh. But there's no place, no space in my mind in which past and future can exist. I used to be an enthusiastic affirmer of hyperspace and higher dimensions, but now I'm more like a robust skeptic. I don't think it's thinkable for humans to imagine a place other than everything right now. An other place outside of reality, outside of the reality of everything at the moment, where the past or future might live. There is no there. So we can't think of a there where the past or future might be. There's only the present. Now, the present could easily exist, I think, at multiple scales. What is a moment? How long is it? We don't really know. There could be an experiential moment, a day-long moment, a phase of my life moment, an epoch moment. Those could all be forms of the present at different scales. I don't deny it. But in general, there is no future, no past. There is, in my vision, a set of nested present moments that confronts a next, an almost future, and a just past now that feeds patterns back into the whole present universe. But I'm sure you already knew that.
Timber Tamber, It's Only Dark.
Nietzsche's notion of eternal recurrence was originally conceived of as a test. Whether or not his idea is physically real, and it could be, for it's plausible that time can be endless, and that in endless time, eventually everything will happen exactly the same way it happened before, an endless number of times, okay, that's possible. But the ancient Greeks thought about that stuff. Nietzsche didn't invent that. What he did invent was the sense that this idea, if you took it seriously, would challenge you at an existential level. It would make depressed people more depressed and healthy people even stronger. He liked stuff like that. If you could really inspect all the high and low moments of your life in depth as they were, as they felt to you, would you, could you, will them to occur with no changes, exactly the same way, keeping you inside that pattern forever? Are you affirmative enough to say, yes, I want an unending series of the exact same experiences I already had, exactly as I had them? Deep down, could you say yes to that? Because that's what it takes to say yes to everything. That was his idea. Now, the simplistic way to read it is to assume that there are just some people who are more affirmative than others. But there's actually a profound psychotechnology involved in the wish or the will to extend experience indefinitely through time. Yeah, we say eternal recurrence, but you honestly don't know what eternity is. In a practical sense, it just means some unknown amount of more time. Indefinite extension of time. And we use this trick all the time to make ourselves stronger, don't we? How do you get used to cold showers, which they say are good for you? Well, you have this unpleasant experience, the cold shower, and at the same time you intend, you wish to be able to do it longer, to extend it, to extend your presence under those conditions. How do you get fit doing any kind of exercise? You feel the burn, and you try to want to keep going. Ultimately, this is a kind of shamanic practice. If you imagine the very first, the primitive priests at the dawn of history showing people how to consecrate things, how to make things sacred by performing actions that seem to live in eternity. Imagine how the medicine man hands you the magic pipe. He does it, or she does it, with a kind of deliberateness that tries to signal the endlessness, the immortality of the pipe, the immortality of the relationship, the immortality of the gesture. The sorcerer who stands before the elemental powers as if he, like they, was an immortal thing, has been there from the beginning, is still there now, in the beginning. At first, this was the first and last moment, and it will go on resonating forever, that he or she wills it, even muscularly, to go on forever, to be a deed of forever. But this also relates to normal maturity. You don't have to be a primitive shaman. There's a sense in which growth and superior self-organization, say looking and feeling forward when considering eating options and extended play for children's brain development, are all part of this same notion of the urge to extension. Right? There's a whole system of reasonably well-proven childhood brain development tactics that involve something like extended play. That when the child wants to play firefighter, you don't dismiss that as useless. What you do is force them to do that. Not force them, but encourage them to do it much longer. They're going to play firefighter for 2 hours. They're going to bring in every aspect you could possibly bring in, right? In place of long chain reasoning, which they aren't ready for, you give them long chain imaginative play and immersion experiences. Whatever they want to do already imaginatively, you want them to do it more richly, with more nuance, but also longer. You want them to will to keep going, to keep doing what it is they're already doing. It's not enough to tell them to stop doing something useless and start doing something you think is healthy and productive. You have to take whatever they're doing and get them to do it longer, because their ability to extend their focus and their feeling for longer durations of time determines in many respects how mature and sophisticated and powerful their brain is going to be in the future under whatever conditions the future happens to throw at us.
I'm Layman Pascal, and you've been listening to Time on CILU 102.7 FM in the Cinematic Asylum.
Which lasts longer? A million years in which nothing happens, or 10 seconds with 50,000 events crammed into it?
Telling the time in English. What time is it? It's 2 o'clock.
You're watching this video. Your brain cells are firing in anticipation. A story
what time
is
unfolding.
Time is moving forward. Or is it? What if I told you that nothing is happening?
It's fine.
There's no story unfolding. The story has already been told. The video has already been uploaded. You're just watching it 1 second at a time. So there is a story unfolding for you only. What if your entire life was like this video upload, like a DVD? The story of your life is already on that DVD. The only difference is that you don't have a forward and reverse button. You're forced to experience your DVD one moment at a time. There are some strong signs.
As the COVID-19 pandemic continues to spread, it is important to stay safe. Coronavirus is now in Canadian provinces and territories. By law, if you have traveled abroad recently, you must self-isolate. To do your part, stay home as much as possible and practice social distancing. Try to maintain at least 2 meters away from others. Encourage those who are sick or showing symptoms to self-isolate or to seek medical attention. As always, wash your hands frequently, avoid touching your face, and practice good respiratory etiquette by covering your coughs and sneezes. Clean regularly used surfaces. COVID-19 symptoms can mimic colds and flu and include fever, cough, and difficulty breathing. Infected individuals may also have mild symptoms or none at all. For up-to-date information, check reliable sources like your local health authority or the Public Health Agency of Canada.
CILU is sponsored in part by the students of Lakehead University, our listeners, and our sponsors. At this time, we would like to thank the following sponsors for their continuous support.
Signal Resources Limited, Thunderbay's locally owned and operated audio-visual professionals. Contact them about your next multimedia event or installation at 807-475-9341 or at signalresources.com. The Thunder Bay Community Auditorium. Find them at tbca.com to purchase tickets and find out all of the details on their upcoming events. Vox Popular Media Arts Festival, located inside Trinity Hall at 310 Park Avenue. Join the fun every September for the annual Media Arts Fest, entering its 16th year in 2020.
One, two, three, four.
All right. Wow, wow, what do you know? Just me and the big CD. Blue jeans and a digital watch and a lot of other modern accessories. Slap bang across the street, little coffee and a Toblerone. Ooh, American shoes, giving money to a brother on a saxophone. Name, have I seen you on TV? Okay, what do you do? Do you work for the telephone company? Sha sha, what's the vibe? Some fish or mammal? Don't mind, the witch is there. I've been thinking what you think about me, thinking maybe. Do you wanna get a drink with me? Do you wanna get a drink with me? I got a little bit of sex appeal. Do you wanna get a drink with me? Do you wanna come home with me? Do you wanna come home with me? I got a little bit of sex appeal, and she said, La plume de ma tante. Et c'est le bureau de mon oncle. Le papier de mon oncle. Et c'est le bureau de ma tante. Hot dog, that sailor boy, he got some fancy feet. Chopin on a digital file to set your mind at ease. Shoe shine like summertime, yo meanie mighty mo. Chiang Mai, he's a friend of mine, everybody give a dog a bone. Do you wanna get a drink with me? Do you wanna get a drink with me? You got a little bit of sex appeal, do you wanna get a drink with me? Do you wanna come home with me? Do you wanna come home with me? I got a little bit of sex appeal, then she said, La plume de ma tante. Et c'est le bureau de mon oncle. Le papier de mon oncle. Et c'est le bureau de ma tante. Sex appeal, do you wanna get a drink with me? Do you wanna buy a home with me? Do you wanna buy a home with me? We can raise a little family, then she said, La plume de ma tante.